Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for the Agriculture Report and Science in the News, coming up after As It Is.
Hello again, and welcome back to As It Is, the program that helps you learn and improve your American English and hear about important things happening in our world. Today, we talk about sexual violence, a problem that often occurs during wartime. A famous Hollywood actress speaks out. Then, we'll take a trip to one of America's most beautiful cities, San Francisco, California, to learn how some people are beating the traffic jams caused by cars and trucks while floating on the water. As It is coming to you from VOA, Washington. New guidance on investigating sexual violence in war has been released at an international conference in London. Movie actress Angelina Jolie helped organize the 4-day-long gathering, which took place last week. She is a special representative for the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees. The goal of the conference was to end the impunity, the freedom from punishment, for those who are guilty of sexual violence in conflict. Christopher Cruz has more.
Layla Damon was 18 years old when her parents told her about her adoption. She was born on Christmas Day, 1992, in the city of Sarajevo, as Yugoslavia was violently breaking up. Her mother did not want to see her newborn child. She gave her away.
My mother, who was Bosnian Muslim, was raped repeatedly in the concentration camps at the time, and she became pregnant, and then in the end ended up having to give birth to me in the central hospital in Bosnia, in Sarajevo.
Layla grew up in Britain. She was adopted by the husband and wife team who filmed her birth. The fighting in Bosnia has ended, but Layla says the Balkans war continues to affect people.
Out of so many rapes that went on in Bosnia, I think there were only 12 that actually went to court. It's probably my birth mum's story, this kind of sense of injustice that nothing ever really got done to help her.
Layla Damon now works for an aid group called War Child. It took part in the conference, where organizers released guidance on how to record and investigate sexual violence in conflict. Actress Angelina Jolie spoke during the conference.
I have met survivors of war zone rape around the world, and almost without exception, they ask for one thing: justice. The right to be accepted, not shunned by society. The right to long-term economic and health support, and above all, the right to see their attackers held accountable in a court of law.
In many African countries, few sexual attackers are punished. And conference organizers say the use of rape as a weapon of war is common in places like the Democratic Republic of Congo. Helen Kezienwaha is Uganda country director for the aid group ISIS Women's International Cross-Cultural Exchange. Her group gives medical and emotional support to victims of rape.
Most times when women are raped, their families, and especially their husbands, reject them. So they suffer from depression, loss of memory sometimes, and sometimes they have suicidal thoughts because of the anger that is resident in them. Sometimes they see the perpetrators of the violence and nothing has happened.
The international community has praised political reforms in Myanmar, also known as Burma. But activists say the situation for women there has not changed, especially for ethnic minorities in areas where there is still conflict. Zoya Fan is campaigns director at the group Burma Campaign UK.
In Burma Campaign UK, the reports of rape and sexual violence that we received has been increased since President Thein Sein started this reform process. And many of the women who have been raped, they have been gang raped.
Conference organizers hope the new guidance will end the culture of impunity for sexual violence in conflict. I'm Christopher Cruz.
Commuting is often a major issue in America's big cities. Many people live outside cities and spend a lot of time just going to and from work. Now, some San Francisco area commuters are beating the traffic by taking ferry boats. A ferry ride can offer a nice change from busy roads and crowded trains. As we hear from Ann Ball, ferries are a small but growing part of the transportation solution in Northern California.
Historic cable cars may help visitors to San Francisco travel around the city. But local people usually use cars, taxis, and public transportation, including the Bay Area Rapid Transit Rail System. Ferry rider Dan Haggerty really likes the two ferry systems on San Francisco Bay. He says they provide a much more pleasant ride from faraway communities.
It's faster than the rail transit, and there's nothing like being on the water in the morning and coming home from work. It's relaxing.
Ferry passenger Christine Lorline says the ferry ride is a lot better than the trip she once made by car.
There's something about getting out of the bubble of being in a car and out into an open environment that's just so much more social and interactive. And on the ferry, people are really, really friendly.
Whatever the weather, Bob Bardner always takes a ferry ride.
It's always a good day to ride the ferry. Like, I never regret taking the ferry to work instead of the train.
Ernest Sanchez works for the San Francisco Bay Ferry. He says each boat is like a carpool, with more than one person making the trip.
Some of our boats can carry, for example, up to 388 passengers, and so that's one large carpool that we take advantage of the natural road, which is the bay, and address the problem that way.
Ferries have been moving people and their vehicles around San Francisco Bay for more than 150 years. The first ferry service was launched in the 1850s. Today, the ferry system includes more than 10 boats. They stop at ports all around the Bay Area. Researchers are developing technology that could make the boats more energy efficient. They have been studying the high-tech sails on America's Cup racers. A firm wind wing is a new kind of sail being tested on the bay. The 14-meter-tall device stands upright like a sail, but is made of lightweight carbon fiber. A solar-powered computer helps to control its movement. Early tests show fuel reductions of up to 25% when the wind wing is connected to a small boat. Tim Lipman works for the Transportation Sustainability Research Center at the University of California at Berkeley.
You can hold a certain course to, say, have a passenger ferry run along a prescribed course and simply use the wing where it's advantageous to assist the boat moving forward, and then let it drift if it's not advantageous and simply use the motor on the boat.
Researchers are also exploring the idea of hybrid ferries, boats powered by traditional fuel and electricity. Hybrid ferries with experimental sails are still a few years away in the future. But the current ferries offer a pleasant ride for thousands of people in the San Francisco Bay Area. I'm Ann Ball.
And that's it for this edition of As It Is from VOA. But don't go away. There are more Learning English programs yet to come, and world news at the beginning of the hour.
The Agriculture Report is next, followed by Science in the News. You can read and listen to our programs and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Agriculture Report. Alpacas are large animals with long, thick hair. They are related to camels and llamas. Most of them live in the Andean area of South America, but a growing number of them are being raised in the United States. VOA recently visited an alpaca farm near Washington to find out why. Alpacas are being sheared at an alpaca farm in Maryland, less than an hour away from the nation's capital. Shearing is the process of removing the thick, hairy covering, or fleece, from the animal. Some of the alpacas quietly let their owners shear them. But some of them do not like it at all. The alpacas on Sugarloaf Farm are sheared to keep them cool during the hot summer months. The shearing is also profitable for farm owner Kevin Brandt. He says there is a growing demand for alpaca wool.
We're finding that there are more people in the marketplace looking for alpaca yarns because it's considered to be hypoallergenic, and it's really as soft as cashmere.
Mr. Brandt and his workers turn the fleece from the animals into yarn, using equipment at the farm. Mr. Brandt sells natural and colored yarn and other alpaca products in his store at the farm. But that is not the only way he makes money from his animals.
We raise and sell alpacas as bred females. We also sell pet males and fiber males to others. We also have a stud service where we'll take our stud males around and out for hire.
Mr. Brandt says he entered the alpaca farming business because he and his family love the animals.
My wife and oldest daughter and I were at the local county fair, and we decided to stop into one more barn before we went home, and it happened to be the alpaca barn. And almost instantly, we fell in love with the alpacas.
Experts estimate there are about 300,000 alpacas in the United States. Mr. Brandt says few alpacas live in places other than South America. The farm's website says 99% of the 3 million alpacas in the world live in Peru, Bolivia, and Chile.
Alpaca are just a wonderful livestock. They're gentle. We've raised our three kids here, and you know, it's a wonderful lifestyle to have.
And as more and more people learn about the joy and money alpacas can bring, he believes there will be even more farms like his. And that's the VOA Learning English Agriculture Report. For more agriculture stories, go to our website, learningenglish.voanews.com. I'm Katie Weaver.
From VOA Learning English, this is Science in the News. I'm Anna Mateo.
And I'm Christopher Cruz. This week, we report on research that shows most newborn baby deaths could be prevented. Then, we report on the first international plan of action to end newborn deaths. Later, we tell about a call for pregnant and breastfeeding mothers to make sure they are getting plenty of iodine in their diets. And finally, we tell about a possible link between premature birth and a collection of mostly harmless bacteria.
5.5 million newborn and stillborn baby deaths are reported every year. But very little money is being spent on efforts to reduce that number. That was one of the findings of a series of papers published in the British medical journal, The Lancet. The findings also show almost all those deaths could be prevented. Joy Lawn led the research.
Every year, there are 2.9 million babies who die in the first month of life, and most shockingly, a million who die on their birthday, the first day. And there are 2.6 million stillbirths, most shockingly, 1.2 million who die while the woman is in labor.
Most of the deaths take place in low- and middle-income countries. But Ms. Lawn notes that newborn and stillborn baby deaths are also an issue in rich countries. For example, the United States has about 500,000 preterm, or early, births every year.
Joy Lawn is a professor at the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine. She is also an advisor to the aid group Save the Children UK. She says many babies and their mothers could be saved for just a few dollars in medical care.
71% of newborn deaths can be prevented with solutions that we have already. 3 million women, babies, counting newborns and stillbirths, could be saved every year with investment at the time of birth.
That care at the time of birth includes simple things like keeping the baby warm and helping him or her learn to breastfeed. Another good idea is to make sure the baby has skin-to-skin contact with the mother.
Professor Lawn says doctors have known for years that many newborns die, but she says spending to prevent the problem remains low.
Of the billions of dollars that are given for child survival, only 4% of that donor funding even mentions the word newborn, and yet 44% of under five deaths are among newborns. So there's a major mismatch in what the funding is going to compared to where the deaths are now.
Much of the money is spent on preventing deaths of mothers and children up to age five.
In recent years, it has become more common for hospitals in the United States to prepare birth records for stillborn babies. Professor Lawn says it is important for parents to know that their child has been recognized. However, she says, researchers found that in many developing countries, no such record is kept. More than 50 experts from 28 organizations in 17 countries took part in the research. Their findings were published in the British medical journal, The Lancet.
Melinda Gates, the wife of American businessman Bill Gates, recently made an appeal for the first international action plan to end newborn deaths. She urged delegates to the World Health Assembly in Switzerland to support the Newborn Action Plan. Health officials agree that many, perhaps even most, newborn deaths are preventable. Yet nearly 3 million babies die each year within their first 28 days of life. Melinda Gates told the meeting that by approving the action plan, health ministers can immediately begin saving young lives. The delegates voted to approve the measure. Ms. Gates told reporters that 5 low-cost interventions are very effective in saving newborns. They include breastfeeding, stopping and treating infections, and skin-to-skin contact with the mother. Ms. Gates said 3 countries, Ethiopia, Rwanda, and Nepal, are already putting these steps in place and reporting some success.
And simply by using the health care extension worker or health community worker platform that they've got and focusing on those newborn deaths, they've been able to bring down not just under 5 mortality, but newborn death rates as well. So we have those as models, and the other African nations and other countries around the world are looking at those 3 countries to learn what is actually possible by focusing on this.
Ms. Gates says the newborn death rate in Ethiopia has gone down by 28% since the country began working on the issue 6 years ago.
One of the United Nations Millennium Development Goals is to reduce the number of deaths among new mothers and children under 5. Great progress has been made in reaching this goal. But the World Health Organization says South Asia and Sub-Saharan Africa still have high numbers of newborn deaths every year. It says India, Nigeria, and Pakistan have the highest numbers. Melinda Gates says many countries neglect the issue of newborn deaths because they are working to reduce the number of women who die during childbirth. Ms. Gates said that if there are problems giving birth, health workers first try to save the mother. She says it is important to make health workers understand that they should work on both the mother and child at the same time. The Lancet recently published research that shows, in most places, more than half of all child deaths are among newborns.
The American Academy of Pediatrics says pregnant and breastfeeding women should make sure they are getting enough iodine in their diet. Growing babies, both before and after birth, need iodine for brain development. But a new study says about a third of pregnant women in the U.S. are not getting enough iodine, and only 15% take pills that give them the important mineral.
The National Academy of Sciences and the American Thyroid Association say pregnant and breastfeeding women should take vitamins that have at least 150 micrograms of iodide. Iodide is a kind of iodine that can easily be taken in by the body. The U.S. Institute of Medicine says a good diet, in addition to vitamin supplements, should give pregnant women 220 micrograms of iodine every day. It says breastfeeding women should take in 290 micrograms. Iodine is commonly found in fortified salt, but researchers say many women get their salt from processed or prepared food. They say this kind of salt does not contain iodine. they urge pregnant and breastfeeding women to get tested and take extra vitamins to make sure they are getting enough of the element. Women who are thinking about having a child should make sure they have enough iodine, because many women do not know they are pregnant early in the pregnancy.
The placenta, which supports the growing fetus, may not be as clean as many medical experts once believed. New research suggests the placenta may contain a collection of bacteria that may affect the pregnancy and even premature births. Doctors work hard to prevent such births because the babies often do not weigh very much. If they survive, low birth weight infants are at increased risk for health and developmental issues. They may develop cerebral palsy, lung and gastrointestinal problems, and eyesight and hearing loss.
Researchers at the Baylor College of Medicine in Texas studied the placental tissue of 320 women. Most of these women gave birth the traditional way, without doctors performing an operation. The researchers say they found about 300 different kinds of bacteria in the placenta. Most of them are harmless and help the baby's health. Until this discovery, experts believed that those harmless and helpful bacteria lived in the mother's vaginal canal and were passed to the baby during birth. The researchers made another surprising finding. They found that the mix of bacteria in a newborn is not like the bacteria found in the mother's vagina. They were able to link the bacteria in the placentas of women who recently gave birth to microbes in the mother's mouths.
Kjersti Aigard led the research team. She says that may explain why women with gum disease often give birth to babies at less than 37 weeks into the pregnancy. The normal pregnancy lasts about 40 weeks. Ms. Aigard reported on the study in the journal Science Translational Medicine. She said researchers believe the bacteria from the mouth traveled to the placenta through the mother's blood. The placenta is connected to the wall of the woman's uterus by the umbilical cord. It is the only organ that forms in adult life and then not used after birth. It feeds the fetus as it develops and provides oxygen. It also removes waste and produces hormones that support the pregnancy.
Kjersti Aigard says things like smoking and diet have been linked to premature births. Those factors can be controlled by the mother, but other factors, like what is in the placenta, cannot be controlled. So women should not blame themselves for giving birth to premature babies.
In this situation, we really want women to step away from that, I accept the blame for what happened in this pregnancy, and much more one towards, well, if there are things that put me at risk for preterm birth that I can change, then I'm going to do everything within my power to change those.
By learning more about the placenta before the child is born, researchers hope to identify women who may be at high risk for preterm deliveries.
This Science in the News was written by Christopher Cruz, who also produced our report. It was reported by Joe DiCapua and Jessica Berman in Washington and Lisa Schlein in Geneva. I'm Anna Mateo.
And I'm Christopher Cruz. Join us again next week for more news about science on The Voice of America.